Hi, this is TJ Murphy, Editor-in-Chief of Lava Magazine. Welcome to the Serious Triathlon Podcast with Lava Magazine, presented by Lava Magazine. And today we got a really cool guest to have on, Dia Noor, who is the CEO and co-founder of Ventum Bikes. And if you know Ventum, you know that they're making some really rad, beautiful bikes that not only look fast, but obviously are fast. Dia, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on and chatting
with us.
Thanks
so much for having me. No, thank you.
Yeah, and speaking of those results, Kevin Collington, one of your athletes, had a good race.
He did. I guess, do we call him the Pan American champ now, I guess?
I think that's the right title.
That's the right terminology? Yeah, no, congrats to him. I mean, well-deserved. He's been working very hard on it, so very happy for him.
Yeah, that's great, and well, first of all, I just want to put out there that if you know, folks listening in on the show notes, we actually have a cool joint project with Ventum, a pretty fantastic giveaway. And if you saw the recent cover with the Ventum on the cover, we've got a sweepstakes giveaway for that bike. So just go to the show notes and click onto that. And also VentumRacing.com is the website. But I'm always pretty charged up to talk to, industry folks like yourself that are endemic to the sport. And it's an interesting thing. Like, I don't think anybody really just says, hey, you know what? They're going to college and I want to go into like creating a bike company, a tri-bike company. There's obviously got to be some interesting passions there. And I was wondering if you could just share your story, how you came to found, Ventum and how it's going for you. And that's a big, broad question to start off with, but let's just go at it.
Excellent. Absolutely. Yeah, actually, you know, the interest came about probably 10 years ago. So, well, I can even backtrack. So I come from a business background. I used to own a telecom company that I started with my brother, Omar, in 2007. And we actually sold it in 2014. But around 2009, my brother got into triathlon, and that's a whole long story in itself. So I'll save that one.
Okay. Did that serve as kind of your introduction to the sport? Him
exactly.
Getting into it?
Okay. Precisely. He started doing triathlon as a dare by one of his friends, whose friend never actually did it. Omar did it. It was Nation's Try in Washington, D.C. was his first triathlon. He got really excited, met some other triathletes, and, you know, if there's one thing us Noor brothers do is we don't do anything half-assed. It's either all or nothing, and, you know, for better or worse, honestly. And so my brother says, you know, that's it. I'm going pro. And I'm like,
oh, my God.
Yeah. He's like, that's it. I'm doing this. I'm going to try to go to the Olympics. And I'm like, okay, cool. But, you know, what about this, you know, this little telecom company that you're, and your 200 employees, what do you want to do about this? And he's like, oh, you can handle it, Dia. So my brother went off, and, you know, and I'm maybe not being the most fair to him because, you know, we have the best relationship. He's my best friend and everything. So I supported him going to try to be a professional triathlete, which he did. And he had a couple cracks at the Olympics, didn't quite make it. But that was essentially my introduction to triathlon. That is when I started the races, getting really into it, following him, making triathlon friends, and probably some, maybe not all of your listeners would know, but then I met Leanne DeCave. And so that brought me even further into the triathlon world. So Leanne is my girlfriend, and funny enough, today's our five-year anniversary.
Five-year anniversary, and
I got a gift. So let's
fantastic. She's a great woman, and not to mention a four-time world champion. Okay, so I can see that obviously triathlon has absorbed you by that point.
It has. So, you know, my brother's a professional athlete, my girlfriend, my friends, my life, and fast forward to 2014. When we sold the business, you know, I thought I was going to take a nice little break. So, you know, I was telling all my friends, I'm like, I'm no longer going to be a slave to email and my phone. I'm going to wake up in the morning and read a book and, you know, all sorts of nonsense. Fast forward 3.5 weeks, And this was June 2012, and I was the most depressed I've ever been. I mean,
it only took that long.
Oh yeah. It was a disaster. I was truly depressed. I needed something to do.
It's like that situation where the athlete trains for 6 years to be an Olympian, and they go to the Olympics and they get their medal or whatever, and a couple weeks later, they're like, what now?
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly the reason why I didn't go for it. No, I'm just
kidding. Same here.
Too
depressing.
Yeah. Oh boy. So that was really my introduction. And then throughout the time, just being a business-minded guy and just always looking, you know, for things here and there, I wanted to get in business in triathlon. I just didn't know exactly what. We explored event management. We explored putting on events. In fact, funny enough, I guess I could say this. We really wanted to put a WTS race in Abu Dhabi.
Oh, right on.
Yeah,
right
it eventually on. Happened. I mean, we were not at all involved in it, but you know, that was one of the opportunities that we were looking into it. But then in the summer of 2012, Jimmy Sear approached me, and Jimmy's a professional triathlete. He came up to me and had the most amazing idea, which is, you know, he wanted to show me what later became Ventum. This is a project he had been working on with his father for, and actually a whole bunch of aerodynamicists and engineers in Australia, but it was very much of a you know, their hobby. This is what they were doing on their side, because Jimmy's sister is also a professional triathlete. Dad owns multiple, you know, titles and awards and world records, actually, in the engineering, in the mining field. And so him and his friends would get along, you know, on the weekends and, you know, do anything from CFD to CAD, and then they start laying up their own carbon and coming up with different ideas on how to make Jimmy the fastest possible bike. So Jimmy was showing it to me, and, you know, I just fell in love. And I was like, well, what are you planning on doing? He's like, I think we'll probably make a few here and there, and you know, probably try to even sell them. And I was like, well, how many? What's going on? Where's the business plan? That's my business mind going, you know, kind of nuts on it. And then just by the end of it, I was like, wait, we have to bring this to the market. Like, this is the time for it. This is, you know, so the beauty about it is that I've come to learn a lot about engineering and bikes and whatnot over the last 3 years. I can't even believe to say that. That's almost been 3 years, but yeah. Can't believe it, but I certainly didn't come from that background. I came from, you know, the business background, the marketing, the branding, you know, and obviously owning a tech company, you get to pick up a thing or two about that as well. So that's my background. But then Jimmy comes in from this purely engineering, background, and he, you know, he'll admit it to you that, you know, his marketing and his branding and all this stuff was not his strong suit.
Right.
So it was like a perfect marriage. You know, there's such little overlap. Besides the fact that he's just an awesome guy. So, you know, right then and there in the summer of 2012, we started talking more seriously. They were on generation maybe 3 or 4 at the time of the bike, and kept making some more tweaks to it. And that's when we really decided to take it seriously, to kind of bring the branding and the marketing and the business side of this hobby, you know, bring it up to the on par with the engineering that had gone into it. And so that's kind of how it came about. We then started, I think the first bike we fulfilled was right before our pros got their bikes in the summer is it 15 or 14? Am I missing my dates right? I'm sorry, summer 15. So it's been 2 years. Right? 16 is our first. Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay. No, it's a blur.
It is a blur. I'm like literally trying to think. The company started in 14, but it was the summer of 15 of when we actually, the pros, we actually showed our first prototypes, you know, the ones that production prototypes. So, and it's been going strong since then. You know, 16 was our first full year, and here we are in 17. We are, I'm very happy. I mean, I can't tell you how proud I am of the team that we've built up and how far we've come. You know, sales right now have almost doubled year to date since last year. So I there's nothing.
You mentioned the sort of perfect marriage there, and it makes a lot of sense to me. It's, you know, I've been around, as an editor within this sport for, oh my goodness, more than 20 years now, which talk about a blur, but, You know, especially with I think of triathlon bikes having kind of this it resonates that same sort of engineering drive that you see in, for example, Formula One race cars. I mean, there's mm-hmm. there's it's kind of the fun of it too. It's and you actually kind of you kind of in a bike like yours, you really see that it's visual, but it's not that's fantastic. But if it's not delivering in terms of performance, then it just goes away. It's going to vanish. But you guys have there was a there like when working with Jimmy, you were able to take what, you know, that's another thing. It's so interesting is that the engineers that kind of drive the technology in this sport, particularly in the bikes and wheels categories, and I'd say the wetsuits too, even with in triathlon, are thinking about this stuff night and day, and they're it was like a zip engineer I was talking with that just watched a time trial at the Tour de France, and is one of their cyclists had used a round a water bottle as opposed to an aerodynamic water bottle. And he knew exactly what that cost the racer, and it drove him nuts. Right. And I love that kind of passion because that's what ultimately through the process you sort of describe, which I just imagine, you know, your email's been going off the hook ever since you took that 3.5 week break. But you know, I think that's the kind of the fun of it. Are you actually having fun being in this? Because it's a competition itself. There's so many great tri bikes and tri bike companies out there that are working really hard at this to.
Oh yeah.
You know, to compete in that area takes a lot of energy, right?
Absolutely, it's a small and competitive market. Am I having fun? Absolutely. Am I having fun every day? Probably not. I have to be honest. I have to be realistic. Part of my job is to put out fires. In fact, I would say that is the majority of my job. And so rarely, although it's been happening a lot actually recently, so I shouldn't say rarely, but you know, I'm not the guy that's receiving that email that's saying, hey, I just want to let you know I love my bike so much. And you know, you guys have done such a great job. And I did this and then that and check out those pictures. You know, now my call the director of happiness, Rachel. Rachel gets those emails many times a day. So I need to be reminded of that from time to time. And the way I remind myself is expos. When I go to expos and actually get to interact with our customers and see the positive feedback, it brings me so much happiness and a sense of fulfillment. So, you know, it's great to be able to see that, right?
You know, triathletes love their bikes, you know.
They really do. More than cars, more than, well, I should probably just leave it there. I don't want to get in trouble. It is my 50th anniversary.
Right on.
But yeah, so no, I am having a ton of fun. Now, that being said, it has come at a cost. And I would say the biggest cost has been my physical and maybe mental shape, you know. I mean, you were just talking about the zip engineer. I mean, talk about working all the time, you know. And I had mentioned earlier that both my brother and I have a very addictive, obsessive personality. And so...
Which I think you'd probably need to start a telecom company.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. But, you know, the downside of that is I can never shut my brain off. I can never... It's ventum... even from the time I wake up to the time I go to bed, because I dream about it, and I'm being very honest. So that is a little bit, you know, that's a bit of a challenge that I'm actually trying to work on a little bit. I cannot just let it go. I cannot, you know. And then the second thing I would say that, and probably Jimmy will kill me for saying this, but I think combined, Jimmy and I have probably put on the weight of the weight of a 10-year-old. Child, like we probably put on a good 75 pounds.
Oh my goodness!
Our athletic careers are just not at their peak. Let's just say.
Yeah, I'm sure this maybe something like this happened, but I know this that years ago I was editor in chief of Triathlete Magazine, and I remember we were looking for an editor. We were And we received a couple of resumes with cover letters that were like, "Hey, you know, I really love triathlon. I'd love to be a get a job at your magazine so that I could train all day and, you know, really live the life." I'm going, dude, that that sounds great to me too.
But, I think Jimmy's been on a bike, I think, once or twice in the past 2.5 years. I'm not kidding you.
I'm just guessing here, but part of, you know, there's probably just a series of different chains of events that you have to kind of monitor and keep moving forward. But in terms of like taking the vision of a bicycle to making sure the design is right, to prototypes and manufacturing and all of this sort of boxes you need to check off before you can bring something to market, which with a, you know, a time trial bike that's designed for aerodynamics and being lightweight yet stable and all of these things, that sounds really hard to me. Am I right?
It is. Yeah. It is. I mean, there's so many moving parts, so many, and I don't mean just the parts that go on the bike. You know, so much testing, so much R&D and goes into it. Now, we were very lucky, and well, probably not luck, but, you know, I had mentioned that this project had been ongoing 3 years before I even jumped on board. So the actual Ventum 1, which is the one that we have today, it hasn't changed from last year. It's exactly the same. Had been tested, ridden, designed, thought of for 6 years. So, you know, we had that privilege, right? And I can't say, you know, I don't know exactly what the maturity dates of kind of the dates of other bikes and from inception to delivery, but that's an exceptionally long amount of time before you even come out with your first, call it, production prototype, with 6 years of refinements. So you know, and that's probably why we were very fortunate to have, you know, very little to no issues on our production bikes, you know, and we had nothing that had to, you know, make us go back and redesign anything or anything like that. It's just been so much time and effort to make it perfect, or as close to perfect as possible, really paid off for us. So that I can say for sure.
And, you know, and here's an interesting variable that I think it makes that equation all the more difficult, I would think anyway. I really believe that we're entering this age of personalization. And that certainly applies to a number of things. Like, I actually, I interviewed Lance Walker, who's at the Michael Johnson Performance Center in Dallas, Texas. And, you know, he's a kinesiologist, exercise physiologist that works with NFL athletes, college football players that are getting ready for the combine. They actually are beginning to work with – they have worked with endurance athletes like Galen Rupp and Mo Farah. And so what was interesting is that he was – in talking with him, he was saying that, yes, there are these principles, but what we're seeing is that even like something like – he was talking specifically about running form, that there are some core principles that we need to adhere to, but they're realizing that for optimizing performance, they've got to look at the individual and how that person might move from position to position when they're running is going to be different than, say, Michael Johnson, you know? And
right.
And I'm seeing the same things in nutrition. You know, it's not just – it used to be like, well, if you're not doing the zone diet, if you're not doing the high carb, low fat diet, whatever. But now I think we're in this age where it's really about, hey, you know what? Let's look at you, the individual, your genetics, your body type, what kind of racing you're doing or want to do. Now, and so when I think of if I'm going to invest, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 or $15,000 in a tri bike, which are the, you know, these are the kind of investments that we make these days. Personalization, like, so could you talk to me about, like, is that something that, I mean, that's a fairly broad question, but like, how have you guys tried to attack that part of the puzzle?
No, listen, and what you say is you're absolutely right. Personalization is, you know, they were saying, and I'm going to relate to what you said to tri bikes. You know, a couple years ago, it was integration, right? Mm-hmm. The whole industry is like, oh, we're going to integrate everything. And now it's definitely moving towards personalization.
When you say integration, could you kind of define that for us?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So like, you know, your nutrition being integrated into the, you know, so it's your bike comes with everything kind of on it, integrated on it, which is great. Looks wise, it's also, you know, convenient if you don't want to go, you know, aftermarket parts or whatnot. However, it actually works exactly against what you just mentioned, which is personalization, because you're stuck into what you can do with that bike, right? Because it's all proprietary. This gel holder is here and it holds to this stem in this way. And if you you can't remove it, or if you do, there's no other aftermarket part. So it actually, it does stunt personalization. So one of the things that we've done with the Ventum 1 was make sure that anything on the bike can be picked up from any bike shop or hardware store. And you're going to say, oh, that sounds a little strange. Well, no, not really. Because, for example, what if you don't like the Ventum bars? You just don't like them. Well, we run a straight 1 1/8 steerer so that you can remove them and you can put Zip bars, you can put MP bars, you can put Shimano bars, any bars that you want. On a lot of super bikes, you just can't do that, right? Because it's proprietary. The aftermarket parts will not fit on that bike. The same thing with our brakes, same things with, you know, if you can, it's any direct mount brake and so on and so forth. And same thing down to the bolts, right? Because a lot of companies will do a special bolt head. So that means you need a special tool from them, which means if you travel like we do and TSA, you know, opens up your bag and you lose your some sort of bolt, you get to your race, and guess what? You don't have the bolt, and you can't purchase it because it's proprietary to this company, and you're not racing. As opposed to us, you literally go to Home Depot or Ace, you know, pick up a bolt, put it on there for now. You know what I mean? So that's part of the personalization. But obviously, that's just step one. We've taken it a lot, you know, further than that. So the next step was custom paint. We're lucky enough to have our bike to have, you know, it's a beautiful canvas. It's got these big curves on it. It's got this wide area, right? Unlike your traditional tri bike, we can actually put a lot on it. So you can, it's provided to be a very good canvas. So we do have an in-house artist, and he is an artist. You know, he's not a painter. And he essentially will take your ideas and we'll incorporate them into a beautiful design on the bike. From there, we decided to go a step further. And I'll stop right here and tell you, like, one of the philosophies that we have at Ventum is that we are not a bike company that has a customer service department. We are a customer service company that has a bike department. That's literally what I say on a daily basis there. I come from a customer service background. My first job ever was a customer service rep. So we're very big on customer service, and I would say, you know, we really stress that so much. So that goes without saying. So,
you know, let me just make a comment on that, like how, you know, I find myself breathing easier when I hear you say that, because we kind of look in my daily life, like we just moved not too long ago, and of course I had to do the thing where we call the cable company and things like that. And I just, you know, and then it, of course it's not working right off the bat. And I'm like, oh no, I got to call them. And I know it's going to be a brutal experience just getting to talk to the right person, let alone solve the problem. So to hear somebody go, you know what, there's an opportunity there to actually make lives a little bit easier. That's kind of refreshing. I just want to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, and I'm not saying that, you know, the competitors are not doing a good job at it. It's just, you know, we're just approaching it differently. We're approaching it differently. You know, again, the tech background, the customer service background, and that's kind of what we're bringing into it. So having that mentality, you know, working with our customers on the custom paint, we decided to go, you know what, let's go a step further. And this is going to loop back to something that you said, that everybody wants personalization, but also everybody's very unique. And what I mean by that is, I can take two athletes and put them on the same bike, same position, same Ventum 1 in the wind tunnel, and their drag, which is, this is how we measure, and I'm going to keep it pretty simple here, but when you look at their drag, which is how you measure, you know, how fast or slow they are, essentially, they could have massive differences. Hmm. So one could be a lot faster, or the other could be a lot slower than the other, and exact same bike. And so you're going to say, well, why is that? Well, it has everything to do with their position. So talk about, you know, customization, personalization.
Right.
You know, someone could have benefit from going down a couple inches or a couple centimeters. Somebody could have benefit from actually going up. Hmm. One of our athletes, Justin Dare, is one of our pros. Mm-hmm. We actually raised him in the front, which, you know, tradition would say, oh, the lower the better. Not the case. It depends on what you're interacting with. What helmet are you using? What skin suit are you using?
Sure.
What's your position? How wide? How narrow are your arm pads? So in order to do that, that's when, you know, we decide, okay, let's take customization to, you know, a new level. And that's when the Ventum Signature Edition came out.
Right.
And, you know, for those of you who aren't familiar with Signature Edition, it's kind of like the Lamborghini of bikes. it costs $32,500. You know, everything on it is top of the line, from, you know, titanium bolts. So there's no, you know, from 3D printed machine, you know, pieces. It's just, it gets kind of crazy. But one of the things that it includes is an all paid expense trip through the wind tunnel. Right, so we fly our customers first class from wherever they are in the U.S. Somebody recently tried to come from Dubai and expected us to pay for a first class ticket.
That eats up that $32K pretty quick.
We had to put a little asterisk on our marketing on that one. Like, that's a $25,000 ticket, sir. Like, and then you want the bike, and so anyway.
So where do they? Where let's say somebody's in Portland, Oregon, and they invest in this. Where would you fly them to?
So we would take them first class to Scottsdale, Arizona, to the faster wind tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
We would put them up in a 5-star hotel, probably the Ritz-Carlton usually.
Dang.
And they would spend the day with Ventum engineers. Hmm. And oftentimes Jimmy himself will go if he can. And we will work with them on their position. We'll test out different helmets, different wheel sets, different combinations. And we really optimize them on their Ventum 1. So I can confidently tell them, you are the fastest you can be on what I think is one of the fastest, if not the fastest bike possible. So they leave knowing that that's been done. We also add a photo shoot there as well and stuff like that. And, you know, sometimes our pros, if our pros are hanging out, a pro will go out on a ride with them. So it's a really, really cool experience. It's a lot of fun. But funny enough is, and I know some people are going to probably roll their eyes on this, but it's a bargain. And what I mean by that is that if you break it up, yeah, it's a ton of money. There's no doubt about it. But if you break out everything that you're getting, you're actually like saving money if you were to go out and get all those things. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure does. And also you're getting a measure of certainty with – You're taking out some of the guesswork. Like, I think these will be the right bars for me, or the right, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's great. But so there's also a trickle down effect, right? I mean, that I don't expect many people to be able to just drop $32,500 and do this, of course. But there's a trickle down effect from that, and that's when we also partnered up with VeloFix, right? And so. Now VeloFix, you can choose to order your bike, because as you know, we have two ways of selling our bike. We do direct, but we also depend on a very loyal dealer network, and that's something that I want to stress is you know, we have a good hybrid system and it's working really well. So in areas where we don't have dealers right now, the way it works is that you get your bike through, I guess, essentially like any other direct-to-consumer brand would, through either UPS or FedEx or DHL, which is good. It's okay, but I want the experience to be better, right? For many reasons. One is I'm at the mercy of UPS, and you know, not to diss on UPS too much, but you know, they've played a couple of games of football with some of our boxes, you know, and yeah, and so you're really at the mercy. So can you imagine, you're a consumer, you've paid 10, 12, 15, 8, whatever brand, you know, whatever level of Ventum you purchase, you're so excited, you're tracking it, everything's cool, you're coming home from work, you get to your front door, and there's this beaten up box with a scratched or damaged Ventum 1. That's a horrible feeling.
Yeah.
And that's a feeling that you're gonna harbor some hate, and it's not gonna come from UPS, right? You're not gonna be like, UPS did it again, right? Yeah. It's gonna be towards Ventum.
Sure.
And I don't blame you for it, right? I mean, and it's just gonna, I can't imagine the disappointment that you'd feel. So that's where VeloFix and companies like VeloFix really, help. So our partnership with VeloFix is where we don't have dealers and where these people don't have the opportunity to go and get a bike at a shop, we have VeloFix deliver the bike. And so VeloFix actually takes ownership of the bike. They get to look it over. They get to, make sure it works, tune it up. They'll come to your house. They'll put you on a trainer. They'll take a look at you. You can even opt for a full fit at that time if you wanted to. But, they'll answer any questions, go over the bike. Then 30 days later, they'll come back and check in on you.
Huh.
Yeah, make sure that everything's what's going on. Oh, you're hearing some creaking here, or, it's not shifting properly. Whatever it is, they'll do any tune-up that you want. And that's what I think consumers deserve. I mean, especially for that kind of money. You can't just – so that's why.
It makes such a profound difference. And I'm going back a ways, but I remember I was all excited to buy I'd saved up enough money. This is going back to like 1980s, and I'd bought a new Trek. I was going to race the Donner Lake Triathlon, and I did it kind of the old way, which was going into the closest bike shop to me, which at least in that time frame, I'm sure what I was, it was a guy walking in, they're like, who didn't know anything about bikes, or certainly how to turn a road bike into a sort of a time trial bike, mm-hmm. or whatever. They just looked at, here's this guy that I think would fit on this bike we've been trying to get rid of for 8 weeks. And certainly there was no real fitting process. This is we're talking like 30 years ago, but that part of it, that part of the equation of matching your body to the bike, the bike to your body, especially if you're into longer races, half Ironmans and Ironmans, when you're on the bike a long time, makes such an incredible difference, not to mention kind of the emotional bond that you have with your bike, which you're clearly going to have if, and it's funny, those little things, like I totally get what you're saying. If I'd invested the time to pick this particular Ventum bike out and lay in the money and UPS, it goes to the UPS sorting facility in Memphis, Tennessee or whatever. And actually read an article about that. And it's just an insane kind of circus thing that happens there, let alone what happens before and after. But, and even if it's just a cosmetic thing with the box, it still has some sort of weird subconscious effect on me.
Of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So those are the things, when we're talking about personalizing, those are the personal touches that we want to work on. And I think the whole industry is going to move that way anyway. Right. I mean, we've got to step up our game, I mean, if we're going to ask for this kind of money, we have to, come to the table with everything. So
VeloFix, by the way, is an interesting company that, because that kind of service is really, it sounds like they are doing the same sort of thing that, you're obsessed with doing, and that is looking at areas of opportunity. Like, hey, what sort of gap can we fill in here in terms of the service aspect? And
absolutely, and that's why it's such a good partnership. I mean, they're literally doing like what I wish I could have done, And obviously, I'm not in their space, and that's why I didn't do it. And yeah, just I couldn't say anything negative about that company. I'm very, very happy to be partnered with them, and they know what they're doing, I mean, and I don't know how much of their internal workings I'm allowed to share, but I don't really care, so I'm just going to share. when we started this partnership, they were so structured on how to transfer knowledge to all their trucks. And so they have a thing called VeloFix University, where I get to dump all the Ventum knowledge, how to work on it, this, that, videos, photos, typical question, everything. And they have to go through it, and they have to actually take tests before they can touch a Ventum. They have to pass a test and make sure, and prove that they've actually studied and practiced all that. Yeah, so it's really refreshing. It's really the kind of, you know, when we talk about customer service, I mean, wow, they've nailed it. So, you know, talking about personalization, the other thing I actually want to talk about, because I think it goes hand in hand with personalization, is access. And what do I mean by that? You know, these bikes are expensive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, you know, you were just telling me you just had your second child. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You know, yeah. And, you know, like, you've got some responsibilities, you know, and even if you're making a really good salary, just to drop $15,000 or $10,000 on a bike, I mean, that's an, you know, I mean, that's, I don't know how much college costs these days, but, you know, that could be like, a, you know, maybe, I don't know, like six months of college.
half a semester.
Yeah, exactly. wrong analogy, but you know what I mean.
I totally get it.
Groceries for the year. I don't know. So, you know, it's not an insignificant amount of money. And so I think companies, especially bike companies, because we're probably the largest ticket item in a, well, we definitely are the largest ticket item in a, you know, for a triathlete, we got to work on that, you know. And so one of the things that we did was the trade-up program, where we will take your old bike and we'll give you 110% of its value towards event one. And so it's, you know, allowing you to make it a little more affordable. Now, the other thing that we're about to do, which hasn't been released yet, actually I've never even spoken about this, so here we go.
Oh, great.
Is financing. So, yeah. So what you'll be able to do, and it's probably going to start, I'm only guessing, I should probably check with marketing, but maybe next month. We really struggle to find the right finance partner. Mm-hmm. I have a really hard time with somebody charging outrageous interest rates. So we needed a partner that, you know, that was willing to work with us. We finally found that partner. And so probably next month, you'll be able to trade up your bike and then finance the balance.
Wow. So you kind of get a credit. You start off with a credit on your the financing plan.
Exactly. And I think, and don't quote me on this, but I think there's like maybe like 0 or very close to 0% APR for a certain amount of time. And
right.
So now you can pay off your bike. So trying to work on that accessibility, you know, that access to these kind of machines, you know, it's just things that I don't, as far as I know, not too many companies are doing in our industry. So,
you know, so interesting. And it's working for you. Like you mentioned, that your sales have been going well. Like, can you kind of paint the picture for me? Like how are your sales, is your company growing at a rate that you're pleased with?
Very much so. I mean, I would have to look at the exact number as of yesterday, but it was like, you know, I think we're up 78%, 79%, from year to date from last year, which, you know, is phenomenal.
Especially, and I just, we had an editorial meeting, a live editorial meeting recently, and I hadn't read the story, but someone had read a bicycle retailer story about the industry still hurting and all that. And then I'm hearing you talking about how things are going pretty well. I wonder, is there something that overall the bike industry is not really doing, or are those numbers not quite spot on with interest?
I think those numbers are probably spot on. It's just I feel like we're different. I don't want to say we're exempt from it.
Right.
Well, there's two things. One is we're a young company. There's going to be, you know, as long as you're doing things right, you're gonna have growth. You know. So, but two is we're doing things very differently. You know, we are very different than, you know, all those big boys that have very traditional distribution rights and or distribution routes. Sorry. So I think that's helped us a lot. You know, we're definitely have a different approach to our business. But again, you know, I'm sure a lot of that growth is 2016 was our first full year. So
yeah,
you know, we're here's another year under our belt. You know, we are probably more marketing, more branding, more awareness, more of the bikes out there, more interest. Mm-hmm. I'm sure all that fits into it. So
yeah. It's an interesting topic. I think that you know, I've been around long enough that I've seen the sport of triathlon have its upticks and its downticks, but overall, I had this discussion with Andy Potts last week. Mm-hmm. And he made the point that you know, if you go back 15 years ago, you know, if you talk to a grade school class of kids, they wouldn't know what the word triathlon meant or things like that. And now it's actually more part of the vernacular across all age groups, and the Olympics has certainly had an impact on that, and the global growth of triathlon. It's and I got to say, I think you know, something I believe you guys are doing really well, and that is that this goes back to a conversation I've had with Paul Huddle years ago, and I'd helped him and Rock Fry with a book on Ironman training, and I just said, what's your advice to your athletes out there about, you know, buying a bike? And he said one of his fundamental things was like, when you see the bike that you really want, that like just kind of makes your you salivate a bit, you know,
right.
That you're going to be faster on that bike. There's something you said for that. Like, yes, have the engineering and the bike fit and everything dialed in. But you know what? There's something about seeing a bike and going, man, that thing looks like it's going to scream.
Yep. Oh, absolutely.
And then to the whole idea of like a custom paint job, that's, it sounds like an excess, but it's awfully cool.
It is. It's a lot of fun. That's for sure. That's for sure. But to your point, you know, it's also very refreshing to see. I mean, just in the last year alone, look how many unusual bike, they call them unusual bike frames, right? Or non-traditional bike frames have come out, you know, and it's great. Like, it makes me so happy to see that. And reason being, it to me, at least, it feels like it validates how we chose to go. There weren't too many bikes, you know, that looked like ours or that looked different. I can probably think of just one before us, and at least in recent times, right? We could go back to like the Cheetah and the and whatnot. Cheetah,
yeah,
right.
Natasha Badman,
yeah.
Lori Badman wanted that too. Yeah,
yeah. But to see, you know, some of the bigger brands coming in, and you know, buying into it and have the science behind it, engineering behind it, saying, oh wow, yes, this is, you know, the way forward. It's great. It's great for us.
Yeah.
It makes me very happy, because that, believe it or not, that's obviously a battle that we had to fight, right? Here we are. Oh, so you're a new company, and then wait, what kind of shape is this? Oh, and I mean,
sure.
It made it very difficult on us, you know, to be so different.
It's kind of like, in a way, it's kind of like the Tesla thing, right? It's like,
right, yes.
I seem to recall Tesla was like, hey, you know what? We'll give away some of our technology just to see some of the major players get involved in the kind of thing we're doing.
Yep. No, that's exactly right. You know, and although we were, you know, we passed all the ISO standards and everything, and we were, you know, it was a very uphill battle to convince the consumer initially that, no, this is a safer, faster bike. And I think we're definitely there, at least, you know.
Yeah.
And then seeing the big boys come in and do that is just, it's amazing. So,
well, I want to mention again to get a look at your bikes and also the kind of the options for how one would go about buying a Ventum or a Ventum Signature, ventumracing.com. But you are also at dealerships nationally and internationally to some extent. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. We have, I don't have the list right in front of me. I should have been more prepared than that. But
okay.
We have 20 to 30 dealers in the U.S. We have distribution in almost all continents. We're still working on a couple, but yeah. So.
And do you travel quite a bit these days? Are you going to, like this summer, will you be going to triathlons to kind of like?
Yeah, so yeah. Actually, I've been traveling a little bit more the non-public travel, right? So like the manufacturing travel and the distribution making deal travels, not so much the Ironman circuit travel, but I am going to be at some races. I'm definitely going to be at Eagleman, which I'm pumped about. And then the following week, I'm going to be in Costa Rica for the 70.3. We actually, you know, that's one of our distributors actually is Costa Rica. So if you live in Costa Rica, you can actually buy a Ventum in store.
Oh wow!
yeah.
We're gonna have a reporter there too, so we're actually gonna be at the event. Yeah.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
I wish it was me. I wish it was me, but it's not.
You can't make. You passed on it, huh?
No.
And then I'll be at the ITU Worlds in Penticton.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, I'll be there because actually we'll have a few Ventums racing there. So I'd like to be there for it. And obviously 70.3 Worlds, Kona, for sure. So yeah, I'll be around.
Oh, super. I'll be around. And yeah. I can't let you go without asking. So how's Leander doing? How's everything going for her?
Yeah, she's doing well. She's doing well. I mean, you know, it's been a slow start of the season. She's focused on a couple races in the middle. She's focused on the ITU Long Course Worlds. That's going to be one of her A races. She's also focused on Eagle Man. So yeah, no, she's excited for this season. And she's definitely has different goals than she's had in the past. And I'm excited to finally, you know, I guess I could say this. Like, you know, she's been doing this for 20 years. Like yeah. You said, she's won every world title there is to win. She was the first woman to, you know, do the double in 2012, winning Kona and 70.3 Worlds the same year.
Right. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, she's done a lot. She's done a lot. And sometimes once you've done that, you know, it's hard to motivate yourself, right? It's hard to, sure. So what's next? So what's next? So it's really refreshing to see her kind of, she's got this renewed enthusiasm to race this year. So Penticton.
Good for her.
Yeah. ITU long course. She's really going to give it a go. So I'm interested to see how she does there. So yeah. So thanks for asking.
Oh yeah, no, I'm a fan, and she.
I am too.
I bet you are. It was a remarkable double, and you know, she's a great spokeswoman for the sport. You know, it's a great personality, very down to earth. That's been my kind of take on Leander, and. And like you mentioned, and again, I'm referring to a conversation, I'm sort of fresh in my mind because I was talking with Andy Potts last week, and, you know, he's been at it a while since, like 2002. I'm glad to hear that, because to compete at that level, to go to not only, you know, win 70.3 Worlds, but then to turn around and go to Kona and things like that, and the intensity of preparation and sacrifice, and how you've got to do everything right to show up in top form for any world championship, that they can, someone who's accomplished so much can actually just enjoy the sport as well, and it doesn't just become like this burnout job, like maybe, you know, like starting and delivering on a telecom.
Oh yeah, exactly. No, it's tough. You know, and I'll tell you one thing is, in 2015, Leander for Kona was in the best shape I've ever seen her ever. Huh. And way better than 2012. I mean, she was running, and I mean, just, it was phenomenal. It was incredible, and she really wanted to do well, you know, in Kona. And I don't know if you remember or if you're aware, but that's the year she crashed.
I remember.
She was right behind Daniela, and feeling great. And she just got a little cocky, or maybe overconfident, or maybe too relaxed. And she wasn't holding on to her bars very well. And a little bump came about, and she just flew over her handlebars at 40, you know, kilometers per hour. Which eventually took her out of the race. Now, Leander being Leander, this was the first year the Ventum 1 was featured in Kona. It had literally we had just finished the pre-sale. Mm-hmm. So Leander's first thought was, and I'll get to the point of the story, but Leander's first thought was, oh man, I better get up and get on the bike if
I
can.
For the sake of the bike.
Exactly. Like, I don't want anyone to have any questions that the bike, you know, isn't safe. She had taken a huge tumble. In fact, she should have never gotten back on the bike, and it led to some. It wasn't smart. You know, some see the photos from that day. But anyway, she got on the bike, and the bike luckily was okay, and she cycled another 80K before was delusional and just was up in an ambulance, right?
Yeah.
But my point is, going back to like burnout, is she had given everything she had for that year, for Kona 2015, and I've just never and after that and after the crash.
Sure.
It was really hard on her. I mean, that whole off season. So coming back in 16, she just couldn't get it going. You could tell, like, she was so deflated. And that's why now in 17, seeing her so excited about racing again and being patient and doing the right things, it's awesome to see. So.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. And, Yeah, gosh, you know, it's interesting. You can, those age groupers like myself can just imagine what the magnitude of something like that is. And every time I watch Hawaii Iron Man, and I think anyone who's made that commitment to be a professional in the sport, like your brother, by the way, it's so hard. It's you really have to give up so much for so many years to just, you know, have a shot at finishing,
It's
have a
crazy.
shot at finishing the top 10 at something like Kona.
Oh,
And
yeah.
not only that, you know, you've got to be a business person. You know, you got to take care of your sponsors and things like that. And obviously, that takes a toll itself to, and you know, they didn't get into this because they thought, oh wow, what a cool way to make money. They got into it because they love endurance athletics. They love triathlon and they love competing. And you just I'm glad to hear, you know, and I can just imagine, because I, again, I know age groupers. It's a thing that Bob Babbitt and I have chatted about. Like, if you go to the Hawaii Ironman, and as a journalist, and you watch the race, and it's always emotional and overpowering in its own way, like, you know, any championship is, but Kona's sort of special in that regard.
It
And then
really is.
you the next day, and you see those folks, and I'm thinking of age groupers
Yeah.
that are so disappointed because they missed a time or whatever, and you're like, wow, you know, we put in so much of the sport. It's like it's you really you're already putting yourself on the line in an emotional way, and it's great to hear that. And you multiply that times a factor of 100 for someone who's a professional athlete making their living off of it. And
Right,
you
exactly.
know, so, well, good. That's great news, and it'll be fun to keep our eyes on Landa, and also Venom Bikes. Well, Dia, thank you so much for joining us
Of
again.
course, my pleasure.
Be sure to check the links in the show notes, not to mention the sweepstakes to win Eventim. All the information's there, and keep your eye out at Race Expos. You might be able to ask some questions directly to Dia in person.
Absolutely. Yes, please.
All right. Hey, thanks so much, man. Have a great summer, and hope to check in with you in soon.
Absolutely. You too. Talk to you soon.